3 weeks on the Psalms. First 2 weeks, we did the first 100. Now we're going to do the last 50 today. All right, I used that joke last week. I thought to myself, they won't laugh again if I tell that same joke. But, Johnny Carson proved you can tell the same joke over and over again, and I kept laughing. I know that. So in any case, no, we're not going to do the last 50 Psalms. I decided that on the Psalms, I was going to focus on this book by C.S. Lewis. It's called Reflections on the Psalms. This week, we're going to do chapter 6. Last week, we did chapter 3. This week, chapter 6 on Sweeter Than Honey. All right, so it'll become clearer as we go along, but that's what I'm working from. And I said it the last two times, so I'll say it a third time again as well. I think of this session as an opportunity to put a commercial in for myself as a Sunday school teacher. I'm hoping that your home class will invite me to teach the entire book over a more than 3 week period, because I think I just get a lot out of this. And I'm hoping you will as well, and I'm just sharing that with you. So that's how we're going to go. I get feedback when I get too close to there, so I'm going to move back away. All right. And I'm going to get this started, and I got this going, and I got this going. All right, so I think I'm ready. So here we go. All right, we're going to be in chapter 6 now from Reflections on the Psalms by C.S. Lewis. And every time I have quotation marks in this PowerPoint set, it's a quote from C.S. Lewis from this book, and indeed from chapter 6. All right, Sweeter Than Honey. So C.S. Lewis quotes near the beginning of this chapter from Psalm 19, "More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb." One can understand, can well understand, this is still C.S. Lewis speaking here, one can well understand this being said of God's mercies, God's visitations, his attributes. But what the poet, the psalmist, is actually talking about is God's law, his commands. And C.S. Lewis said, this was to me very mysterious. So let's hear him talk about why. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery. I can understand that a man can and must respect these statutes and try to obey them and assent to them in his heart. But it is very hard to find how they could be, so to speak, delicious, how they exhilarate. A hungry man left alone without money in a shop filled with the smell and sight of sherries, shrimp, and grits. Okay, that's not really what C.S. Lewis wrote, but I wanted to bring it to where you would appreciate exactly what C.S. Lewis was talking about here. And that's what came to my mind. I don't know. So in any case, a hungry man, no money, nobody stepping forward to give him a copy of their meal card, smelling Sherry's food, and the prohibition of theft. How could that be like honey? When we are really tempted, how can the commands be like ambrosia to us? No, the commands, okay, these are his words, more aptly compared to a dentist's forceps. Now, again, that's a direct quote from C.S. Lewis. I'm not sure my dentist has ever used forceps on me, but it doesn't sound good. And I think the message that C.S. Lewis is sending to us here is, wah! Kawah, that's French. Let me say it to you again. Kawah, that's French for what? All right, so So I want to talk about Psalm 19, and we're going to look at it in more depth here. C.S. Lewis really likes Psalm 19. I take this to be the greatest poem in the Psalter and one of the greatest lyrics in the world. All right, that's pretty high praise. Okay, this is a guy who taught literature, read literature, was all about literature, says, one of the greatest lyrics in the world. Most readers will remember its structure. 6 verses about nature, 5 about the law, and 4 of personal prayer. So we're going to start by looking at Psalm 19. If you do the math here, 6 plus 5 plus 4, you're expecting 15 verses, and I'm going to show you 14. Now, let me just warn you, the versions that he has, what I have is version 14 from the NRSV, is broken into 2. Let's just not worry about counting, okay? So, anyways, here it is. And I'm going to read aloud to you. Again, this is good practice for me. It's good therapy for me. So I'm going to read aloud, and then we'll talk in a bit. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In the heavens he has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom from his wedding canopy, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and nothing is hid from its heat. Okay, so C.S. Lewis says this is about nature. All right, I think he's got it right there. And then the next 5. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is clear, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. Much to be desired are they than gold. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and drippings from the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. All right, so C.S. Lewis spends a fair amount of time in this chapter talking about law, decrees, precepts, commandments, ordinances, saying basically they're all the same words, just synonyms with each other. And here is all the stuff that C.S. Lewis really wants us to be thinking about, basically writing about how he was thinking about this. These are his reflections again, his reflections on the Psalms, and this is something that jumped out at him so much, he wrote an entire chapter about it. And these are the 5 here. And then the final 4, which I have as 3 in my version. But who can detect their errors? Clear me from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from the insolent. Do not let them have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. C.S. Lewis says, in addition, that as everyone knows, the psalm specially devoted to the law is 119. As everyone knows. Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, I don't know if you knew that. But I will tell you, everyone, no, I think he's exaggerating a little bit there. It's not quite everyone. I didn't know that, but now that he brought it up, I do. And everyone has probably noticed, he's gotten a little softer here, probably noticed that from the literary or technical point of view, it is most formal and elaborate of them all. It is a pattern, a thing done like embroidery, stitch by stitch, through long quiet hours for the love of the subject. So let's look at Psalm 119 as well. Here are the first 8 verses. Happy are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord. Happy are those who keep his decrees, who seek him with their whole heart, who also do no wrong, but walk in his ways. You have commanded your precepts to be kept diligently. Oh, that my ways may be steadfast in keeping your statutes. Then I shall not be put to shame, having my eyes fixed on all your commandments. I will praise you with an upright heart when I learn your righteous ordinances. Ordinances. All right, here we go. I will observe your statutes. Do not utterly forsake me. Then the next 8. How can young people keep their way pure? By guarding it according to your word. With my whole heart I seek you. Do not let me stray from your commandments. I treasure your word in my heart so that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I declare all the ordinances of your mouth. I delight in the way of your decrees as much as in all riches. I will meditate on your precepts and fix my eyes on your ways. I will delight in your statutes. I will not forget your word. And, all right, some of you might remember, 2 weeks ago, we asked which was the longest and the shortest psalm. This was the longest. This is going to continue on for 176 verses, 22 sets of 8 verses. If you'd like, I can do another 20. I'll be here all week. So make sure you tip. I've decided, no, we're not going to read all 22 sets. I think you got a sense of how it starts. Your homework assignment for next week is to memorize the 119th Psalm. And it'll be easier for you because they're written with a mnemonic tool. Mnemonic, this is a term for a tool for memorizing things. It's got a mnemonic tool built right into it. Each of the sections of each of the 22 sections of 8 verses corresponds to a letter of the alphabet. So it'll be easier because you have that little clue to help you remember all these verses. And so it'll be, of course, it's not the English alphabet, so that might be a bit of a problem. And wait a second. She said I'm not even back next week. I won't be able to test you on. So maybe we won't have that assignment. All right, so no, you don't have to memorize Psalm 119. But let's talk about Psalm 119 now. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about Psalm 19 and 119. So let's talk. And we should have a couple of microphone holders. Do we have those all set up? All right, good. So C.S. Lewis asked the question, how can the law be delicious? How can it exhilarate? How would you answer C.S. Lewis? How does this make sense? So this is your chance, you know. This is your chance to give the answer before C.S. Lewis has a chance. He's going to give his answer, all right? I'm going to try and convey it to you. But here's your chance to give it before you hear his. Let's give him a microphone here.
Well, when I see something in the Torah, like in Leviticus, where it talks about we're to treat the stranger as equal to the native, you shall love your neighbors yourself, I get a feeling of exhilaration because it's so fitting to our own time.
That's a great answer. I love that answer. Thank you. Got another one here.
You know how we say about children that they, if you have rules, it's comforting to them because they know how they, where they fit. I don't see the delicious part, but what I'm thinking is that if you have a set of confined rules, that's your boundary, and that gives you some support.
That's great. That's another great answer. I like that answer. I like that answer. Other answers here in the front. Wait. Let him. Yeah, let everybody hear.
By putting all of your trust in the Lord.
Good. By putting all your trust in the Lord. And here again in the front row.
I kind of think of it as being like a road map.
A road map, okay.
Which shows you where all the restaurants are. So I can get to the delicious part. Because if you're following the roadmap and you see where you're going and you see where you're going to run into a really bad road and you can avoid it, and you can also see where the good things are that you might want to stop and see. So that's kind of how I see it.
That's good. I like that as well. And notice these are all different. Good. Please.
Well, there's no other way to be happy in Jesus than to trust and obey.
They should make that into a song. They should make that into a song. That's really well said. They should make that into a song. They should. I've got a hand back here. Can we get a hand back there? Get a microphone to go with the hand. Pardon me. He's already got his hand. He just needs the microphone in his hand. That's what it is.
Milk and honey. Manna.
Manna. Milk and honey. Great. Others. Go ahead, please. Wait for the microphone, then go ahead. Sorry.
Ambivalence is really quite stressful. And so with this, you have an answer. And so less ambivalence, you have somewhere to go.
Less ambivalence, so I feel more comforted because I know what to do, or at least what I should do. Whether I do it or not, that's another session, but good. All right. So, I say C.S. Lewis asked this question. I say that he did because he did. He asked this question of a scholar. He didn't tell us the name of the scholar, but he said he asked a great scholar this question because obviously it was troubling him. He didn't have you all to give him an answer. So he asked the scholar, and the scholar said the poets were referring to the satisfaction men felt in knowing that they had obeyed the law. So what do you think of the scholar's answer? You like it?
So,
we got a mic here. Can we get a mic?
I coached for 10 years.
Okay. Well, so we still like a mic because then the people at... Right. Who listen later can hear.
So what I think, sorry, Thomas. So what I think is that's making God a checklist. In other words, if I know that I've obeyed this and I've obeyed that, and I just check it off, then it's a checklist. But if I am internalizing what it is I'm learning, that becomes the honey. That becomes something of my character or my who I am. But to say that the poets were referring to satisfaction men felt in knowing they had obeyed the law, to me it's like I'm so happy that I've been able to check that one off. So that's what it looks like, but it may not be what it was.
Well, okay. So let me just push back here.
Please.
You're saying a scholar could be wrong?
Well, I know. And for a minute, I thought maybe he had asked you, but indeed, the book was written perhaps before you were born.
No,
so, you know.
Actually not, but thank you for saying that. That's a really nice compliment. Thank you.
Scholars could be wrong because we are all imperfect.
Exactly the point. Thank you very much. That's exactly right. Please, here. Pass it down.
I think this sets the groundwork for making us a little self-righteous.
All right. I think you're right. And I think what you're saying and what Tony are saying, are aligned. They're not, I think they're in the same direction. So yes, yes and yes. C.S. Lewis says, the difficulty is the psalmist never seemed to me to say anything very like this. All right, so C.S. Lewis disagrees with this great scholar. Now, it's only fair to say C.S. Lewis was also a great scholar, and I would hasten to add, yeah, and you're allowed to disagree with C.S. Lewis too, okay? I'm going to give my one more plug for Baptists. Baptists, we don't have to believe any, well, but Jesus. Jesus, but we can disagree with Steve. We can disagree with C.S. Lewis. You can certainly disagree with me. And I'm not trying to put myself on either of their levels, but the point really is, you can disagree with C.S. Lewis. He would, I think if he were alive today, he would say that right to you. Yeah, he makes fun of himself often. If you read through his books, he's making fun of college professors all the time. And he was a college professor. And so do I. And for the same reason, because they're so easy to make fun of, because they are so funny. Anyways, and self-satisfied, and memos, move on. All right, so, yes, please.
It's just something that came to my mind also was that I think it's a spectrum, and maybe it depends on where the scholar was on the spectrum. Like Paul discusses us starting off with meat, and then, I mean, with baby's milk, and then progressing to meat. And maybe that scholar was still on baby's milk. And I remember, I mean, it's ongoing till you transition to the other life. And, you know, sometimes you take a giant step forward, small steps back. And it just depends on where the scholar was. I mean, I remember a time in my life where, and I still go back sometimes, just probably reassurance to the baby's milk. And
okay, so that's a good point. And what I'm hearing you lead us into is, let's hear what C.S. Lewis says. Is that fair? So let me try to get his version of the answer, because he doesn't think that this is right. C.S. Lewis doesn't. So let's see what he does think is right. So let me try and do it for you. So here, I'm going to start reading to you again. So here we go. An ancient Jew meant, when he said that he delighted in the law, was very like what one of us would mean if he said, and he uses masculine pronouns all the time, please forgive him, he was old. Anyways, he said that someone loved history or loved physics or loved archaeology or loved electrical engineering or, well, he didn't say that, but okay. This might imply a wholly innocent delight in one's favorite subject or the pleasures of conceit, pride in one's own learning. The danger of the second development increased tenfold when the study in question is from the outset stamped as sacred. So C.S. Lewis is basically putting this up here and then throwing darts at it. He said there's something of this, the love of the field, the love of a particular subject, my love of the statutes that God has given to us. But he goes on and says, thus the law, like the sacrifice, can take on a cancerous life of its own and work against the thing whose sake it existed. It is against this same morbid condition that our Lord uttered some of his sternest words. It is the sin and simultaneously the punishment, and that should be of the scribes and Pharisees. But that is not the side of the matter I want to stress here. So he's going to change the subject. I would rather let the Psalms show me again the good thing of which this bad thing is the corruption. So I'm just showing you what he says in this chapter. He's spend some time talking about this and says, no, that's not where we should focus. C.S. Lewis then goes through the highlights from the 119th Psalm. And I have not reproduced them all here, but I do encourage you to read this. I think it's interesting. And he summarizes it by saying, this is not priggery. This is an English word, but let's just move along. Not priggery or even scrupulosity. I'm not sure that's a word either, but let's move on. It is the language of a man ravished by a moral beauty. A moral beauty. If we cannot at all share his experience, we shall be the losers. Life should, above all things, be ordered, and that its order should reproduce a divine order. On three occasions in the psalm, the poet asserts that the law is true or the truth. A modern logician would say the law is a command, and that to call a command true makes no sense. The door is shut can be true or false, but saying shut the door, that's not true or false, that's a command. But I think, this is C.S. Lewis talking, but I think we all see pretty well what the psalmist meant. They mean that in the law you find the real or correct or stable, well-grounded directions for living, that they are based on the very nature of things and the very nature of God. So look, when I let you guys answer before, and I just use a male pronoun, when I let y'all, okay, when I let y'all answer, several of the things that you said, I think, align really well with where C.S. Lewis thinks we should end up. So good on you. That's one of my phrases I've learned from Steve. Good on you. Y'all. Good on you. See, I can learn. I can learn. Okay. Anyways, moving right along. Real, correct, stable, well-grounded directions for living, based on the very nature of things and the very nature of God. C.S. Lewis takes a page to describe a controversy about the nature of truth from among the 18th century theologians. After refuting their views, he says of God that he is good, hence his laws have emeth truth, intrinsic validity, rock-bottom reality, being rooted in his own nature, and are therefore as solid as that nature which he has created. But the psalmists themselves can say it best. Thy righteousness standeth like the strong mountains. Thy judgments are like the great deep. That's from Psalm 36. Their delight in the law is a delight in having touched firmness, like the pedestrian's delight in feeling the hard road beneath his feet after a false shortcut has long entangled him in muddy fields. All right, so this is one of the things I like most about C.S. Lewis is his word pictures that he draws for me that, you know, somehow resonate really well. This whole notion that there's a contrast here between a muddy field where I've been struggling to pull my foot out of each step and then finally getting back up on solid pavement and how much easier it is to walk. And his argument is that this is what the psalmists are talking about, and they're trying to use descriptive words and phrases like sweeter than honey to convey this notion. Because there were other roads that the psalmists were presented with that lacked truth. Insofar as this idea, the law's beauty, sweetness, preciousness, we haven't mentioned the gold side, but the gold, even much fine gold, okay? Preciousness arose from the contrast of the surrounding paganisms we may soon find occasion to recover it. Christians increasingly live on a spiritual island, new and rival ways of life surrounded in all directions, and their tides come further up the beach every time. Some give morality a wholly new meaning, which we cannot accept. Some deny its possibility, the possibility of morality. So, let's talk. I've been talking for a little bit. Now, let's you all talk. So, one more time, I want you to imagine there's a clever graphic like Linda Brubacher's picture. She's got this one with a thoughtful ape. I love it. I need to get her to send it to me. Anyways, I can't find it. So just imagine it being there. Just imagine there's a really thoughtful ape holding his chin and a really thoughtful, or her, I really don't know the gender of that ape. Anyways, moving right along, what is your response to C.S. Lewis and his interpretation of how God's laws are sweeter than honey? What do you think? I mean, some of you have said so already, but others, do you have an impression after hearing what C.S. Lewis thought? When I teach Sunday school, one of the first things I usually say is, if I ask a question and no one says anything, there's two possibilities. One possibility is, I've asked a really good question and you need to think before you can answer. And the second possibility is, I've asked a really bad question. I'm hoping I'm on the first, and you just needed me to talk for a little bit to give you some time to think. So I'm hoping that's the case, and I'm going to ask it again. What do you think of what C.S. Lewis says about this? Can we get a microphone over here?
The first thing I thought about, that is a saying in England, you're sweeter than honey, and we use it a lot. And, well, honey is sweet. It's natural. It comes from the bees. It's something they've had for generations back, way back in the Bible. And they hadn't even invented sugar then.
Good. Good. Thank you. Anyone else? Please, here.
Well, I don't like the word satisfaction. I use the word, I think you have peace of mind. When you're struggling against sin, then you have peace of mind when you try to obey those laws.
Okay, good.
I think someone already mentioned how children really flourish when they understand expectations and when they feel comfortable. My first thought in the earlier set of sections was if you transfer yourself into a first grade class and you see the children who thrive there, they're usually the ones who want to know what the expectation is. They kind of delight in meeting it. And I think it's because they're not fearful. They're not afraid they're going to get in trouble. They're not afraid they're going to be reprimanded. They're not afraid they're going to be embarrassed in any way. And so I think in some ways it's that understanding God's law is in some ways an absence of fear. You can live without fear. You know you are walking in the way.
I think that's a really good point. Now, I will tell you that when I hear you saying that and what I heard earlier about children wanting to know what's expected and that need boundaries and limits. I think yes, but I also think about, I'm going to again pick on college faculty members. College professors need limits. I think that from my experience as an administrator, in college, that the faculty knowing what the limits are and the expectations and what the rules are, that there be rules, makes them happier, makes me happier. So I think it's true, I'm agreeing with you, but I think it's more than just children. And please.
No, I think just when you peel away the layers of what adulting can add to life and you just think of yourself in your childlike form, I certainly think it's the same today. That absence of fear when you just are driving by the speed limit and you pass the police officer and you think, ooh, I'm good. That is a piece of it anyway.
Good. We had a hand here as well.
Hi. My thought, first of all, came from the generation from which I grew up in, which was baby boomer 60s. And the sense of anarchy, and one of my prayers daily is to help me to discern. And that comes from the Holy Spirit. Because otherwise you get into legalism or rigidity. However, the opposite isn't, it isn't a way of God either.
Good, good. And that's a balance and a dynamic. I'm hearing you say that the Christian life is about. Yeah. Did I capture it right? Okay. Anyone else? Please, here, up in the front here, the yellow shirt, this gentleman here. Earl, thank you.
Thank you. I was wondering if we could go back to the island and the ocean. Was C.S. Lewis saying that the law provided an anchor or something solid people can rely on in the face of the rising tide of amorality or lack of morality?
I think so. That's my opinion. I also think we have to be careful with any of our analogies. I love analogies, but every analogy, you push it too hard and it starts to fall apart. So yeah, I think he was talking about the idea of the things around us, so we like the island viewpoint, and the pressures from other laws or lack of laws being temptations for us. That's how I read C.S. Lewis, his analogy there. That's how I heard it. Please hear.
This is real quick, but you don't even bother setting up laws and boundaries for someone unless you care about them and love them. Love is sweeter than honey. It's sustaining.
That's a really good point. The love is beneath all of this. And I like that point a lot. I'm certainly very glad you raised that. Anyone else?
I don't know where this came from, but God's law, all his laws have that morality. And when it comes to human law, there's been plenty of them throughout history that lack morality.
Good point. Good point. Thank you. Anyone else? All right, so we need to summarize. We spent 3 weeks talking about Psalms. What in this aspect of the study of Psalms strikes you as important? Is there a lesson here you can articulate clearly for the rest of us? All right, that's a tough question, but I thought I would give you a shot. Someone want to take a shot at this? It's a hard question, but I if someone wanted to, I didn't want to miss the opportunity to ask them to. That was pretty challenging. All right, I'm going to let that one go.
I think it's a bad question.
A bad question. Good. Good. Well said. There's a good summary.
Direct from a college administrator.
Yes. So what questions do you have about the Psalms that I... And then attempt to answer next... Okay, I'm not going to be... Okay, so I may be here next week, but I won't be with the one with the microphone on. So I'm going to skip over that as well. C.S. Lewis shares with us in here his response to the Psalms. Shares with us how he thinks about the Psalms. I encourage you to read the book because it can help you when you read the Psalms. All right, so I phrased that on purpose that way. That's an expectation. It's like that expectation in the Sermon on the Mount that I hate when Jesus says, when you fast, do not, and then he talks about all the things you shouldn't do when you fast. I'm okay with all that, but yeah, it seems like Jesus is telling me, Dave, you're supposed to be fasting sometimes, and when you fast, but the first part of that sentence is the part, okay, so that same kind of sentence. When you read the Psalms, and let's just make it clear, clearly Jesus did. He quoted from them. He sang from them. The Psalms are there for us to read. They are challenging. We were challenged last week by the cursings in them. There's challenges in them, but there's a great deal of wonder, wonderfulness in them. They really should be part of our Bible reading.